أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، وباعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، الذي بعد فلا يرى وقرب فشهد النجوى، تبارك وتعالى. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على خاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين والشفيع المذنبين، الرسول المؤيد والنبي الممجد، المصطفى الأمجد، أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما على الإمام المنتظر وحجة الله الثاني عشر ابن العسكري المنتظر، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من الآن إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فإن الله الصادق العليم قال في كتابه الكريم القرآن الحكيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: كل نفس ذائقة الموت. سلامات. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Continuing from where we had left off last night, we now seek to enter directly into the topic that will take us phase by phase and step by step into that segment and those series of events that we have identified to be discussed during these nights of Muharram. Last night, if you recall, we had reached a point where we had explained certain preliminary talks which would assist us in comprehending the different issues that shall be presented to you from this night onwards. And as you heard at the start of this majlis, the verse of the Quran which says, وَكُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ, wherein Allah declares in the Quran on three occasions that every person, every nafs, everything that has a soul has to taste death, which is one of the realities of life. Unfortunately, despite reading it day in and day out, if not day in and day out, at least in the month of Ramadan, because we become so accustomed to associating the recitation of the Quran only in the month of Ramadan, that is the only time we get time to read it. But even if you consider ourselves only restricted to the month of Ramadan, every year we recite this. كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ. Every year we find several people passing from amongst our midst who die away, and we are reminded of this reality that كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ. Yet, the very mention of this name, the very reality that we witness, rather than giving us an understanding that this is something that can overtake us, we tend to shun it. We tend to stay away from it. We tend to regard it as something that is very reprehensible, very disturbing. I don't want it. This fear of death that is there and which was mentioned yesterday, it is there in everybody's mind. Man fears death. The talk of death becomes taboo. You talk about death and as always, don't talk about death. Talk about life. Whereas death is one reality that nobody rejects. There may be people who reject God. There are people who reject the Prophet. There are people who reject religion. But you don't have anybody who rejects death. Even an atheist, when he is talked, he will attest to one thing, that yes, a time will come when I may not believe in God. I may not believe in the here, in the life after death. I may not believe in heaven and hell. I may not believe in anything. But I will surely believe that a day will come when I will cease to exist in this world. A fact so important and so conspicuous, we tend to shun it. We are so scared. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to face it. And it's so clearly visible in our lives. That when you want to talk about it, it's always our elders say, Anavarma baat nahi karwani. Don't talk about this. This is too reprehensible. And it can lead to very disastrous consequences. I mean, assuming that you've got your wife's birthday, right? You want to wish her. Now everybody knows that in the entire yearly calendar, one of the dates that a person should remember, a husband, is the birthday of the wife. Not should remember, he better make sure he remembers. Correct? A birthday comes and he says to the wife, "Hello dear, today is your birthday, many happy returns, happy birthday to you. You know, I'm so happy for you today, today is your birthday. You know what? You're 1 year closer to your death. You address her in this fashion, you wish her in this fashion, and it won't be short of a minor Katrina in your house, right? Now, I don't know about, and I'm using the word you, because mari mate jurat na thi ki mari wife ne keva mate. Probably you've got enough strength to tell your wife this. But this is the reaction that you should expect because of the fear of death. Nobody wants to be heard saying that I have gone closer to the death. Whereas the masumin say every breath that a person takes draws him closer to death. Every time there is a masum, he wants us to get the benefits of the akhirah. He says, remember death. But here we want to stay away. It is a taboo. And this reason of this taboo is that man fears death primarily for two reasons. And it is these two reasons that bring a man's downfall. And we have to go very fast. Because if we don't go fast, yesterday, despite restraining myself so much, I was told it was 55 minutes to 1 hour. So if I have to let go, then it might be a little difficult. But let's hope everything works out well. There are two main reasons whereby man fears death. Mentioned in the Quran, mentioned in the Ahadith, seen and observed and witnessed by you and me totally clearly. One is man's excessive attachment and love for this world. Man has got so much attachment and so much love for this world, he just doesn't want to leave this place. If a person likes something, he doesn't want to get away from it. And that is the reason in a marriage you will find the mother and the daughter crying when the daughter is getting married and going away to the husband's house. Primarily because the mother and the daughter love each other so much that the very thought of separation brings tears in their eyes. They don't want to let go, but they have to let go. Similarly in the case of death, man does not want to let go of this world. This world is very attractive. The life of this world is very attractive. The glitter, the dazzle of this world is very captivating. Man just does not want to let go. This is the primary reason. Because of his excessive love for this world, the material benefits of this world, the material pleasures of this world, the material dazzle and the glitter of this world, what he does is that a primary and a basic consequence of this intense love of this man for this world is that he begins to adorn this world, he begins to ornament this world, he begins to build up this world. Fair enough. Not a problem. Nobody is saying that you should become a Maulana. Nobody is saying you should become a monk, a hermit. The problem is that when man gets so much attached to this world,
whereby now, for the sake of ornamenting his world, he becomes ghafil of the akhirah. This is where the problem starts. The problem is not love for this world and the love for the things of this world. Even the imams had money, even the imams had position, even the imams were rich at times when they wanted to be rich. But the problem between us and them is that they would use the world to get the akhirah and the pleasure of God. We use the world for the world itself. This is where the difference is. If world is used for the love of the world, it's bad. But the world used to get akhirah is good. Somebody has got money donating for the sake of the funds that they are asking. Good, because you're helping the cause of Islam. This money is helpful. Dunya is helping to get akhirah. A person of sound health, you just heard, asking for volunteers. Somebody has been given good health. Somebody's got a good physique. This good physique to show off in front of girls in the university is reprehensible. But the same physique if used to serve the cause of the niyaz of Imam Hussein is using dunya to get akhirah, very happy. Very good, will help him in the akhirah. The problem is that man, because of his love for the world, for itself, becomes so enchanted with it, that now he wants and he focuses and his entire hammin, ghammin, ghayatul quswa is this world. He wants to build this up, he wants to have a house, he wants to have properties, he wants to have money, he wants to have good children, good wives. Wives, huh? Mind you, plural. And so now, because of these things, he forgets about the akhirah. This is where the downfall begins, because the person comes to the second Imam, Hassan al-Mustaba alayhi salatu wassalam. Saying, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, I'm scared of death. Neither do I want to meet death, nor I want death to come and meet me. Why is it? Imam says, it's a very simple philosophy. So what, explain to me? Imam comes up with a sentence that could be applicable straight onto my head. I'm talking about myself. Imam says, إِنَّكُمْ أَخْرَبْتُمْ آخِرَتَكُمْ وَعَمَّرْتُمْ دُنْيَاكُمْ فَتَكْرَهُونَ أَن تَنْقُلُمْ مِنَ الْأُمْرَانِ إِلَى الْخَرَابِ. Imam says, you have ruined your akhirah. Not ruined, let me put it into a different word so you understand. Imam says, you have converted your akhirah into ruins. You have destroyed your akhirah. إِنَّكُمْ أَخْرَبْتُمْ آخِرَتَكُمْ. You have converted your akhirah into ruins, dilapidated, nothing there for you. وَعَمَّرْتُمْ دُنْيَاكُمْ. You've ornamented, decorated, you've inhabited your dunya. So this place is a castle, is a palace. That place is ruins. So simple. فَتَكْرَهُونَ أَن تَنْقُلُوا مِنَ الْعُمْرَانِ إِلَى الْخَرَابِ. It's but obvious you would be hesitant, you would not be wanting, you would be averse to moving from a place that is inhabited, ornamented, decorated, and go to a place which is completely ruined. You don't want to go there because you spoiled your akhirah. And this is the reason you find on numerous occasions, innumerable occasions, Quran giving us pats on the head and telling us, وَمَا هَذِهِ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَحْوٌ وَاللَّعِبُ. This world, the life of this world is nothing except fun and sport. You think you are making something big, you think you are achieving something big, for how long? 60 years, 70 years, 80 years. When you go down, you're not taking anything with you. It's just fun and sport. It's just vain indulgement. وَمَا هَذِهِ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهْوٌ وَاللَّعِبُ وَإِنَّ دَارَ الْآخِرَةَ لَحَيَوَانَ. It is the real fun, the real pleasure, the real ecstasy, the real success, the dar al-akhirah, the akhirah. But the moment man uses the world for the world, he messes up. And this is what causes everything. And this is what caused Imam Hassan to say, it is because you have established the dunya, yes, but you've spoiled the akhirah. Now from here to go there, you have to meet death. You don't want to meet. Because the only thing that can take you from this world into the akhirah is death. You don't want to meet that death. You're scared of it. You're so scared, you don't want to talk about it. You don't want to listen about it. The reality strikes when Malakul Maut comes. It is at this point of time, it is at this point of time that those words of Imam will reverberate in our ears. Annasun niyamun. People, you're sleeping. It is when you see that you will realize What I was living and considered to be living was a dream. Now I am going to wake up to see the reality of life. فَإِذَا مَا تُنْتَبَهُ When they die, they will wake up. And wake up they will. Before a person goes into the grave, he will wake up. Listen to this tradition of the fifth Imam, of Imam Bakr, alayhi salatu wassalam. Imam is narrating a hadith from the Holy Prophet. He saying, I heard from my father, who heard it from the Holy Father, a Holy Prophet. And the Prophet is narrating the situation of a person after having died and is being taken to the grave. Qala Rasulullah, the Prophet said, when the deceased is being taken to the graveyard, being carried by the hamalatal, his carriers, as he's been carried to the grave, he turns and addresses those people who are carrying. فَنَادَ حَمَلَتَهُ And he calls out to those who are carrying him, أَلَا تَسْمَعُونِي يَا إِخْوَانَا Oh my brothers, don't you hear what I'm saying? Nobody hears. Prophet says, nobody hears. Nobody does hear. Nobody will hear. Then he says, إِنِّي أَشْكُو إِلَيْكُمْ مَا وَقَعَ فِيهِ أَخُوكُمُ الشَّقِيِّ Oh, listen, my brothers who are taking me to the graveyard. I want to complain about certain things and the pitfalls that this miserable and wretched friend and brother of yours has fallen into. I want to talk to you about it. The Prophet is saying, when you say, La ilaha illallah, and you're taking him to the graveyard, don't think he's resting, huh? He's in his own world. We will talk about that later. Right now the Prophet is saying he's calling out to us. We don't hear. But he's calling out and he complains. He complains about certain things. إِنِّي أَشْكُو إِلَيْكُمْ مَا وَقْعَ فِيهِ أَخُوكُمُ الشَّقِي This brother, miserable, wretched, the term is shaqi. This miserable and wretched brother of yours has fallen into certain pitfalls. He wants to complain to you about them. First, He said, I complain to you about Ashkukum. I complain to you about Shaitan. Beware of him. He's deceived me. I am seeing where I'm going now. He came, he promised me things, then he turned away. He's left me in my state that I'm right now. Now when I'm turning to him, he said, I have no power to help you. My job was only to deceive you. Now I'm turning away. He's deceived me, one. Second thing he says, deceive me, is this dunya? This dunya got me so much entangled that I thought this was going to be my life. Khalas, this is what it is for me. Till I saw the angel of death. And at that time I saw this entire dunya, for whom 60 years, 70 years of my life, day in and day out, I was worried about and working for being taken away from me. You can't imagine the trouble that I was going through. 60 years of my effort and this thing going away from me. I complain to you about dunya, be careful, so that you don't face the same consequence as I am facing right now. He's complaining, the Prophet is saying, this is a hadith of the Prophet. He's saying, next I complain to you about corrupt friends. I wish we had more time. This corrupt friends is something that is even worse than a poisonous snake. A poisonous snake can only take a person's life. A corrupt friend can take a person's iman. A snake will only take this life from a person. This dunya, he'll kill him. Corrupt friends will take his akhirat also away from him. So important. Seeking, taking, making good friends in school and universities, paramount importance. He's saying, I complain to you about corrupt friends who took me into corruption. They went to their doom, they took me along with them to my doom. Then he says, I complain to you about my wealth. That wealth I spend so much time earning. Without realizing, without regarding, heedless of the fact whether I'm earning it the haram way or the halal way. Putting all caution to the winds just for the sake of gathering those green bills. In which and from which I did not give out the rights of the people and the rights of God just so that I could collect them. Unfortunately, now I'm complaining that all those things that I've collected, the punishment, the wizard, the babar, the non-payment of the rights of the people and God are upon my shoulders. Those green bills are being utilized by somebody else. I complain to you, be careful about what happens. I have messed up, don't mess up. Then he goes on and the Prophet says, this man is continuing, I complain to you about my children. Be careful, children are very good. But make sure they become religious, because if they are not religious, all your efforts go down the drain. I put so much effort into them to make them educated, radical, looking modern. But I did not spend time making them religious. As a result of which, all my efforts into them, they have eaten my wealth, they have made for themselves something, and left me to be in this deep pit of which now I cannot come out. And then he's complaining, finally I complain, Ashkukum Dari. I'm complaining to you about my house, how much I had invested in this house. How much I had put in money to make it so beautiful, to make it so luxurious. What happened? All my money, haram money goes inside it. I put so much effort into it. I'm over here suffering, somebody else is making benefit out of it. Six things the Holy Prophet says man will complain. And if you look at all of these six things, all of them are related to this dunya. All of them. This is what Imam Hassan says. You have set up a good dunya. You forgot in your akhirah. Had you utilized dunya for the sake of akhirah, you would have gone through. Utilizing dunya for the sake of dunya is where persons mess up. The tradition says it might not be very difficult for us to hear and talk. But the Ravi says, that narrator who's narrating this hadith says, وَكَانَ أَبُو جَعْفَرْ كَانَ يَبْكِي إِذَا ذَكَرَ هَذَا الْحَدِيثِ. When Imam Bakr was narrating these complaints of this person at the mouth of the Holy Prophet, the narrator says, I saw tears streaming down Imam Bakr's eyes. He can be moved. As a ma'asum doesn't need to be moved. Shaykh, you cannot be moved, no? Kana Abu Jafar Yabki, he was crying when he was speaking this hadith. He knows what is happening, he knows what those complaints mean. Those are the words of a person who sees doom before him, but he cannot do anything to help him out. But then you need to move forward. Because we have to understand, if this mouth is a reality, if it is haqq, and it is haqq, you pick up so many ziyarat. Pick up ziyarat-e-jami'ah, pick up ziyarat-e-ali-yasin, pick up dua-e-adila, pick up the talqeen, everywhere. Al-mautu-haq. Al-mautu-haq. It is there, it is coming. We need to know how this happens. The first thing that comes at the time of death is the malakul maut. Now we are moving slowly. Death is the first thing that takes a person from this world into the akhirah. The first thing that will take a person from this world for fulfilling this promise of God, when he says, وَكُلُّ مَنْ عَلَيْهَا فَانْ, everything on this world is going to die. كُلُّ نَفْسٍ ذَائِقَةُ الْمَوْتِ, everything is going to die. إِنَّا لِلَّهِ وَإِنَّا إِلَيْهِ رَاجَعُونَ. We discussed this yesterday. The thing that will bring about this promise of God is Malakul Maut. Malakul Maut comes, I really do not have the time. But there's a lot of things that can be stated about Malakul Maut and how it comes. But we won't just pass by. Because Malakul Maut, when it comes, we have to understand one thing. That whatever we will be discussing in these series of lectures, it's like two sides of a coin. If on one side you find the punishments and the severity being mentioned, the other side of the coin has the positive side. There are people who will definitely be subjected to this side of the coin, and there are people who will be subjected to things on the other side of the coin. If there is punishment, there is mercy. If there is azab, then there is ni'mat. If there is good deed, if there are evil things, there are good things. But you do remember, from the very first lecture, We had stated that we will be following that innama antumul surah Ra'd verse number 7, wherein Allah says that, O my Prophet, you are a warner. He is a mubashir, bearer of glad tidings. But for this series of lectures, we will not be discussing the rahmat, the mercy. Because if we go, it becomes too long. Then we need 2 ashras, which we don't have time for. So we will be sticking to the warner, the things that we need to know to shake us, to get us out of the sleep, to be what Imam says, not be sleeping while we are in this world. We need to get up. So as we are having, I will mention on certain cases, the good things that will happen to the good persons and the pious persons and the righteous persons. But the primary focus of ours, because we as a community, we as the Shias and the followers of Ahlul Bayt have taken our religion for granted. And to be very honest, we are taking our religion for a ride. Because we have got ourselves into that frame of mind that because we do Ali Ali, and because we do Hussain Hussain, that is enough for us to take us into paradise. So we don't need to know all this. No, we need to know all this. Because this has been stated by that very person whose name we call out. And it has been stated by that very personality on whose name we beat our chests. So it befits us to know what these things are. And not just live in a dream world, a world of fallacy, a world of imagination. Because when reality strikes home, and we will show you instances, where people better than you and me have had to suffer things despite having more love for the Ahlul Bayt because of their deeds. But when Malakul Maut comes, the first thing when is being done is this taking out of the soul, because that is what death is. Remember yesterday we had said the separation of the physical dimension from the spiritual dimension is called death. The soul is taken out of the body. The one person who has been given this authority to do that is an angel called Malakul Maut. According to traditions, the entire world is like a plate in his hand. He's got a tablet in which the names of the people are there. Tradition says whenever Allah prescribes death for somebody, the death has come, that person's name from that list goes off. This tablet consists of the names of all the people that are alive in this world. In this world and all other entities that are living that we might and might not know of. When that name flashes off, he realizes that he has to pick his soul. So he goes and picks his soul. But this picking up of the soul from the body in Arabic terminology is referred to as the Sakaratul Maut. Or the Sakaratul Maut, as the Quran says. Sakaratul Maut in English translation is referred to as the agonies of death. Or the agony of death. Sakaratul Maut. Quran says, وَإِذَا جَاءَتْ سَكَرَةُ الْمَوْتِ بِالْحَقِّ. And the Sakara of Maut, that means the time when the soul has been taken out of the body, will come and comes with haqq, truth. Indeed, verily. But the name itself, we will go into the sifat and characteristics in a few moments. But the name itself is enough to give us an indication of what this is. Sakaratul Maut, the time when the soul is coming out of the body. And as the soul is coming out of the body, the things that are experienced by that body and by that soul is referred to as the Sakaratul Maut. The name itself, Sakara, comes from the word Sukra. Sukra means intoxication. Intoxication. When you consume alcohol, you get intoxicated. Alcohol is called Sukra because it is an intoxicant. And that's why we've got this tradition which says, somebody asks, Ibn Rasulullah, why is alcohol haram? Alcohol in Arabic terminology is referred to as khamr. Saying, why is khamr haram? The Imam replies, Al-khamru haramun li'annahu muskir. Alcohol is haram because it intoxicates. So sukra means to intoxicate. Only thing here, the intoxication is not because of alcohol. The Sakaratul Maut, when the soul is coming out, is called Sakaratul Maut, because in that state, when the soul is coming out of the body, the man who is dying experiences such excruciating pain that he loses all sense of time, place and thing. His mind becomes absolutely senseless, as if he is intoxicated. And this is the reason Sakaratul Maut is referred to as Sukr. Not because he's become senseless by consuming alcohol, but he is overcome by senselessness due to the intense punishment and pain and torture that the soul and the body is being subjected to when the soul comes out of the body. And a pain so excruciating, a pain so severe, a pain so intense that our Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha says, فَغَيْرُ مَوْسُوفٍ مَا نَزَّلَ بِهِمْ. You cannot describe what this man is going through at the time of death. Not you and me saying, Imam Ali is saying, فَغَيْرُ مَوْسُوفٍ. You cannot describe, he cannot describe what a person who is dying goes through. You want to listen? In the time of Bani Israel, there were certain youths who were very religious, very pious, muttaqi. Every community has its good students and youths and bad youths. You can see a lot of youths over here who are religious. When I say bad youths, it's not bad. Nobody is bad. At times, environmental efforts, parental involvement, and various other things take him away from religion. When we say bad, it's not the person who's bad. The environment and the upbringing has put in wrong priorities. A youth is still a youth. His heart is still clean. Unfortunately, what has been imprinted in the heart at the hands of the parents and the environment has created a problem for him to have his priorities wrong. So these priorities of these children are over here, listening to the majalis. The priority of some other person is probably some nightlife in Disney. Right? You have Disney somewhere. I was told 45 minutes from here. This Malakul Maut, when the soul is taken out, these few youths of Bani Israel, Muttaqi, pious, righteous, they go on a journey. They say, we want to see the world. Because it's been recommended in the Quran. Siru fil ard. Go, travel. Travel into the land. And then you will see the signs of God. They went. As they are going, they come across, in their way, they see a qabr. Dilapidated, old. Nothing. Absolutely barren. You could hardly even see the writings. Flat, dilapidated. So all of them gather, saying, look at this qabr. This looks a very old qabr. Saying, why don't we pray to Allah so that we can ask God to bring out this person who has died, so we can ask him, how was death for him? This looks for a very long time, this person has died. So they gather together. This is the tradition by one of the masumin. And the masum also mentions the dua that these boys did. They raise their hands and they recite the dua, and they pray Allah, we pray to you, order this person, the inhabitant of this grave, the inmate of this grave, to come up so that we can talk to him. It's not always it happens. Sometimes Allah casts aside the curtains of ghaib. Ghaib is one of the inherent parts of our belief. Ghaib means unseen. Things that are not seen. Some of the things that are unseen, we are expected to believe upon them. And that's why the curtains are placed upon our eyes. We cannot see ghaib, we cannot see unseen, you cannot see God, you cannot see the angels, you cannot see the fire of hell, you cannot see the bounties of paradise. Right now they are there, you cannot see, I cannot see. Curtains, ghaib. They pray to God, all of a sudden, God accepts their prayers. This is a tradition from a masuma. The grave shakes, and then it splits. And as they are watching, they find an old man, face covered, hair covered with mud, coming up, eyes popping out, hair black, beard black, mustache black, thin, face pale with fear, coming out, saying, why have you called me out? You think we asked God to call you out so that we could ask you some questions. Saying, what do you want to ask me? He's saying, they said, we want to know that when you died and Malakul Maut sees your soul and the Sakaratul Maut that you went through, how was it? Explain to us, how was it? We need to know. We want to know. We want to increase our ma'rifat, increase our fear of God. Man says, I cannot explain to you what happened. Remember Imam Ali alayhi salam? فَقَيْرَ مَوْسُوفٍ. You cannot explain, you cannot describe, you cannot narrate. This man says, I cannot tell you what happened to me. But I will tell you one thing. I will not describe what happened to me. I cannot describe the pain that I went through. I cannot describe the thing that I had to undergo. But I will tell you this. If you can understand, I understand. He's saying what? He's saying, I have died 99 years ago. I have died 99 years ago. But even today, after 99 years, the pain of the soul taken by Malakul Maut is still reverberating in my body. 99 years. And this man says that pain, that hurt, that injury is still reverberating in my body. It's still not gone. I can still feel it fresh. 99 years. فَغَيْرُ مَوْسُوفٍ مَا نَزَلَ بِهِمْ. He can't describe. He's saying, I cannot describe. Understand it. And why should it not be so? Why should it not be so? Because this pain is... It's like, again, when people have gone to ask the Masumin, how is this pain of Sakaratul Maut? How is it? How is this pain of Sakaratul Maut? The Masum says, how do I tell you? How can I explain to you? How can I describe to you? It is beyond your comprehension. No, we want to know. Hi, at an opportune time, I will tell you. One day they're going. Understanding for us what that pain is. Why Imam Baqir cries when he's talking about this. The group is going. As the group is going, the Masum sees an animal being slaughtered. He stops. He turns to his companions. Do you see that animal being slaughtered? He's saying, yes. He's saying, what is happening? They said they cut off his neck and now they are skinning the animal to take out the flesh. He's saying, how is the animal? He's saying, the animal is dead. He's saying, I want to ask you a question. What would happen if that skinning of that animal that is taking place now that the animal is dead? What do you think would be the state if that skinning were to take place? You know, when an animal is killed, the skin is just peeled out, right? It's just pulled out from the flesh. The animal is dead. Imam is asking, now that you see that animal being skinned, assuming that animal was alive, and while he was alive, if that skin was being pulled off from the body, what would happen? Ashab and the companions say, Ya Imam, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, you can't imagine a person living and you have his... It's not just one part that is being skinned, that is peeled off. You're talking about the entire skin that is being peeled off the body to reveal the flesh inside and the meat inside. You can't imagine what would happen to that animal. It's nothing that you can describe. Imam says, when the soul is taken from the body, the pain that a person experiences is 1,000 times more than what that animal would experience if he is skinned while living. See, I can't express to you what it is. I can only compare it to something that you might have some sort of cognizance about. 1,000 times more. On another occasion, the Prophet is going. As they're going, they pass by a shop. A shop that is making those halawiyat. You know those zulbiya? No, sweetmeats. For that you need to boil oil, right? And then you put it inside. And then you get those sweetmeats made. Imam is passing, he sees them, he stops. He's saying, you see this? What is this? He's saying, they're making the halawiyat, they're making sweets. He's saying, in what are they making this thing? He's saying, it's oil, boiling oil. Saying, it's hot? Yes, it's hot. He's saying, what would happen if in this boiling oil, if I were to put one of you inside? Saying, Ya Rasulullah, what are you talking? What would remain? Our flesh would just melt out of this. We would just come out a skeleton. He's saying, what would be the pain like? So we can't describe a living person going inside while he's walking, his hands are being peeled off, the flesh is being peeled off. You can't describe that pain. He's saying, when Malakullah takes off your soul from your body, 1,000 times more painful than this. Saying, I can't express, I will only compare. If you can comprehend, comprehend. If you can gain cognizance, gain cognizance. But Imam Ali says, وَغَيْرَ مَوْسُوفٍ مَا نَزَلَ بِهِمْ. You cannot describe, you cannot explain. You can just compare it to something that you know. This is the reason that you find that وَكَانَ أَبُو جَعْفَرْ يَبْكِي إِذَا ذَكَرَ هَذَا الْحَدِيثِ. He would cry when he would talk about this. Because he knows what is going to happen. You and me don't. So we are very comfortable when we listen about death. We don't want to face it. Not facing it does not mean it's not going to come to us. Not wanting to hear about it does not mean that he will not come to you. He is going to come. Tradition says that when Malakul Maut goes into somebody's house to take somebody's soul, and when that person's soul is taken and the person dies, the relatives cry, right? When the relatives are crying and wailing and weeping, oh, our dear one has gone away. Tradition says, Malakul Maut turns to them and says, we can't hear. Tradition says, Masoom says, he turns to them and says, why are you crying? Why are you weeping? I have not done any wrong upon you. I have not done any oppression upon you. All that I have done is follow the orders of my master. All that I have done is obey the rules of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And you don't need to cry, because if I have come to take this one person, if I have come to take this one person, I will keep coming, and I will keep coming, and I will keep coming to your house, and I will start and keep picking up one level after the other till nobody is remaining in this house. He's going to come, we like it or not. And this is what we have to be very patient for, and we have to be ready for. Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha alayhi salatu wassalam. He's got a very beautiful explanation, a description of what exactly happens when the soul is being taken out of the body. He says, when the time for death comes and the names flash off from the tablet, Malakul Maut knows that now it is time for him to take him out. When the Malakul Maut is coming to take out the soul, this person is about to die. The relatives are all around. Imam starts explaining. He's saying the first thing happens is that his limbs become weak when a person is about to die. And then all of a sudden, he sees Malakul Maut. As soon as a person sees Malakul Maut, his one leg has gone into the Akhirah. When the soul comes out, his both of his feet are into the Akhirah. But at this point of time, the first thing that happens when a person is on the verge, on the threshold of death, is he sees Malakul Maut. That scenario is one of those three places that our eighth Imam Ali ibn Musa Rida alayhi salatu wasalam, according to a tradition by a Rabi of Sindhi, he's saying that I heard Imam Rida say that three occasions in a person's life are most terrifying for this person. There will be occasions where he will be frightened. There will be occasions where he will be overcome by fright and apprehension. But three occasions and three points in his life surpass all other points of fright and terror. He's saying the first point is when a person comes out from the womb of the mother outside into the world. Now you and me may think, this child of this few minutes old who's just being delivered, what fear would he have? What understanding does he have? He has an understanding. He has an understanding. Even that 1 minute old child has an understanding. That is why it is said, when a lady is suckling the child, don't listen to music. Don't do ghibata. Don't talk dirty words. Don't listen to dirty things. All of this, if the child is hearing it, he is comprehending it, is going into his subconscious and he is developing into that form. Not just that, Islam says before a child is born, even in the womb, Even in the womb, the mother listens, the child listens, and even in the womb, the child is affected, even before that. But that goes on to the tarbiyat of awlad and development of child. That's another more topic. But now this child that is coming up, Imam Rida is very terrified because he's coming from an environment that he's comfortable, from a comfort zone into something that he doesn't know now, a new world. The second stage of intense fright is when a person is moving from this world into the akhirah. When he's dying, I'll leave the third for a later time. As soon as a person is dying, he sees Malakul Maut. Now he knows that his time in this world is up, one. Second, he sees things that he has only heard before, and he has pictured and portrayed it into his mind. But the reality that he sees is completely different. It is of an nth degree more severe and intense than what he had ever imagined. Because now he's seeing the ghaib. He's gone one leg into the akhirat. Now he can see the ghaib. But as soon as Malakul Maut comes, Imam Ali alayhi salam in his khutbah in Nahjul Balagha says, the first thing that Allah does, first thing Malakul Maut does upon the orders of Allah is, he points out to the mouth of this person. As soon as he does that, this person's tongue loses the strength to talk. Now he cannot talk. Because now he's witnessing the ghaib, the unseen. Because he's on the verge to go into the akhirah. There he can witness. He is not able to relate it. He's not allowed to relate it. He's not permitted to speak about it to those who are around him. So he cannot tell anybody, Mama, Mama, I'm looking at Malakul Maut. Oh, my son, I'm looking at Malakul Maut. No, Malakul Maut comes first thing. He points out to the mouth. The tongue loses the strength to talk. He becomes deaf. He becomes dumb. He can't talk. He is seeing things. His eyes are protruding out of fear. People think he is sick. People think he is suffering a bout of sickness. It's not sickness. It's fear and fright and terror that is overcoming him because he's seeing things. He's seeing angels. He's seeing forms and he's seeing movements that he's never seen before. Imam says, first of all, his mouth loses the ability to talk. He can see and he can hear. He can hear the wailings and the cryings of his relatives. He can see the Malakul Maut and the form and the punishment that is awaiting for him. But he cannot speak now. He wants to speak, the tongue doesn't support him. He wants to talk, the tongue doesn't move. Oh, through the life, that tongue that was going so hard and fast, hurting every Tom, Dick, and Harry, now loses the power to move. Weak man, خُلِقَ الْإِنسَانَ ضَعِيفَ, Quran says, man has been created weak. You think, man, you can do anything. Within a blink of an eye, he can make you powerless. Powerless he is now, he can't talk. Then Imam says, after some time, the slow Malakul Maut starts taking out the soul. As the soul starts coming, the pain is beginning to increase. At a certain point, his limbs go weak, his legs go weak, his hands fail to function. And then Malakul Maut points to his ears. The ears do not listen. One pointing and the ears fail to listen to his commands. Now all that he can see is the lip movements. This is the khutbah I'm talking about, not my words. Imam says he can hear the lip movements of his relatives around him. He cannot hear, he cannot speak. And slowly the soul keeps coming out. Till at the final stage when the soul is about to come out, the Malakul Maut points to his eyes. Now he goes deaf, dumb and blind. He is completely cut off from this world. He cannot speak. He cannot see anybody. He cannot hear anybody. That final stage, the soul is taken out. This man's akhirat has begun. This is what has been repeatedly being told to us. Aksiru dhikr al-maut. Keep remembering death. This is what death is. Baba, your fifth imam can cry, can shake, you not cry on death. But despite these problems, it's not that we don't have solutions. In this series of lectures, we will mention problems, but we will also mention solutions. We will not leave at only the problems. But the problems need to be mentioned first. The intensity needs to be conveyed first. The severity needs to be understood first if we have to move. As a community, we've got this laxity. That till we don't know fayda so the, akarvati. Till we don't know the fayda, we don't go into that. We want to know what benefits. So first we know the problems, and we will, as we progress, we will explain for what problems, what solutions will come about. But first we need to know the problems. One of the solutions which I will dedicate one whole lecture upon is what these personalities known as the Ahlul Bayt can do for us and shall do for us, have done it before, will continue to do it for us, because that's what they have been sent for. As a follower of Ahlul Bayt, they will not move alone. Yes. They will not leave us alone. But yes. When will they hold our hands is a matter of question. They will hold our hand. There's no doubt. When? From the time we are falling, till the time they hold our hand to pull us, do we have the strength to bear it? One thing is certain, they will not let us down. But the problem is, when? Till the time they hold our hand, does this weak body, the weak body, not me who's saying it, this is Imam Ali alayhi salam of Shabbat Juma, you and me, the son of Kamal, in the Quran is saying, this weak body, which cannot bear the trials and tribulations of this world, how is it going to bear the trials and tribulations and the punishment of the Akhira? Is this body going to bear it till they pull up our hands? And what did they do to pull up our hands? Today is the 2nd of Muharram. You know, tonight is the night that represents the day when Imam Hussein and his caravan entered the plains of Karbala. It was on the 2nd of Muharram that they eventually reached Karbala. But a strange thing was that, you see, this entire event had been ordained from beginning. This place was identified from beginning of time. But to show the importance of this place, because the most important sacrifice that anybody could ever do for the sake of God was going to take place on this plains of Karbala. In order to show the importance of this place, an ajib event took place when Imam Hussein is coming into Karbala. Recorded in history. This is not a fantasy, this is not stories. When they're approaching Karbala, as they reach the boundaries of Karbala, Imam Hussein seated on his horse, leading the front. As they're about to enter Karbala, all of a sudden this horse, the animal on which Imam was riding, suddenly stops. Imam jerks, move. Doesn't move. Imam jerks, move. Doesn't move. So Imam tells Abbas, Abbas, I think this horse, this animal is tired. Hussein knows. It is the others who need to be informed. You're not going on a pleasure trip or an ordinary trip to get killed. This is something that is going to remain up to the day of judgment, planned by that Almighty God. Saying, give me another animal. The second animal was brought. Hussein climbs up. At that exact location, this animal wants to go, he stops. Baba, move. It's not moving. Saying, I think this animal is also tired. Give me another animal. Hussein sits on the third animal. While this is going on, all the other people now are amazed. What is happening? One animal stops, doesn't move forward. All of a sudden, very nicely, the whole caravan was going on, the whole entourage was going on. Suddenly it stops. Everybody gathers. Third animal, Imam says, move. Goes back, as he moves forward, stops, doesn't move. Report says, seven animals have arrived. Seven. He sat in chains, seven animals, all seven animals at that point refused to go further. Hussein says, call the people around here. I want to know. People, the tribes that live on the periphery of this place, call them. I want to see.
The tribe that lived around was the tribe of Bani Asad. So people went from the group of Imam Hussein, called them, come here, Imam is calling you. They come. Imam says, can you tell me what is the name of this place? Somebody says, we call it Radhariya. So Imam says, no. There must be some other name to it. Some person says, we also call it Shatul Arab. Imam says, no, there must be some other name. So we also call it Shatul Furat. I said, no, there must be some other name. Another one says, we also call it Nainava. Imam says, there must be some other name. Now all those people who had come looking around each other, see, we don't know, these are the names that we know. But there's an old person who might be able to shed light on some other name. Imam says, go bring him. They bring the old man. After precursor and the salams, formalities, Imam says, these people have given me a few names, but I feel there should be some other name to this place. Do you know some other name? He changed for a while and says, Yabna Rasulullah, I remember our forefathers also referring to this place as by the name of Karbobala. As soon as Imam hears the name Karbobala, he says, the tents, because this is where our blood is going to be shed, and this is where we need to pitch our tents. This is what he says. He heard this, he cries out. He says, Ya Rasulullah, I want to stay over here, because I've heard from my grandfather that any son of a prophet who's passed by here has always been subjected to some sort of physical punishment and oppression. Don't stay here, go away. But Hussein knows this is his destiny. And Hussein knows this is the place where Abbas's arms are going to be severed. And this is the place where Akbar is going to face that spear into his heart. The tents are laid out. The tents are laid out. All the tents are laid. Zainab standing as one place. Hussein says, Fizza takes Zainab to her tent. Fizza takes Zainab to her tent. She puts the lady into the tent and she comes out, Fizza. Hardly has she come out when Zainab calls her, Fizza, come here. Fizza, come here. Fizza comes running. Fizza comes running. Oh lady, what has happened? He says, go call my brother Hussain. Go call my brother Hussain. Fizza says, what is the matter, princess? He says, you don't know, just call Hussain. Tell him to come immediately. Fizza goes running. Oh, Akar Sayyidi. The lady is calling. Bibi Zainab is calling. Can you please come? Hussain comes running. He enters the tent and says, oh, Zainab, what is the matter? She says, oh, brother, where have you put me? Into which place have you put me? Where is this place that you have put this tent? Hussain says, why are you asking me this? She says, from the moment I entered this tent, I heard a lady crying out,
لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين. ما سمع حسين.